Hello and welcome to this British Journal of Surgery podcast. I'm Wendy Barnaby. Today we'll be talking about the May issue of the journal, which is dedicated to aortic aneurysms. We're going to concentrate on abdominal aortic aneurysms, AAAs for short. This degenerative condition produces a stretching, a localized ballooning of the artery, which if it bursts is extremely dangerous. We'll be hearing from Professor Janet Powell of Imperial College London and Mr. Jonathan Earnshaw, co-chief editor of the BJS. Janet, let's turn to you first, and congratulations on having two papers in this issue. If we could start with the one on mortality from AAA rupture, I see from your paper that death from rupture of AAAs increased last century until in 1997, men were dying from it at a rate of about 54 in 100,000 and women at about 19 in 100,000. Can you tell us what's happened to the death rate since then, and especially in the last few years?
Well, in the last century, towards the end, we had seen a steady rise in the number of deaths from abdominal aortic aneurysm, particularly from rupture. And in England and Wales, this reached a peak in about 1996-7. And in 1997, a total of about 5,500 persons died of aneurysm rupture. Now, this is a disorder of the older population, and with life expectancy increasing quite rapidly, one might have anticipated that we would see an increasing number of patients coming into hospital with aneurysm rupture. However, it turns out that by 2009, which is the last year we had figures available for, there were by now only 4,000 deaths approximately from rupture. And I suppose the one other thing which is possibly important to say is that these changes preempted the introduction of a national aneurysm screening programme.
So the rate of rupture has been decreasing. What does your study suggest is the reason for that?
Well, our study suggested that potentially there are two important reasons which we can identify. The first relates to the introduction, particularly in the late 1990s, for a less invasive procedure for aneurysm repair called endovascular repair. And this appears to have led to an increasing number of elective repairs being performed in the population above 75 years of age. And previously, these people might not have been considered as good candidates for the more major procedure of open repair. Second, there's been a strong underlying improvement in risk factors for abdominal aortic aneurysm. And probably the one which is most quantifiable in terms of potential lives saved is smoking. I have to say that there have been even more dramatic changes in other potential risk factors, such as the management of hypertension and the widespread use of statins. But currently, it's difficult to estimate what impact these have already had, or indeed what impact they might have in the future.
They are pretty dramatic results in that first paper. Let's turn to your second paper, which is about the growth and rupture rates of small AAAs. Can you tell us first about the study design?
The study design is based partly on the power of numbers and bigger is better, and on the application of a single method for estimating aneurysm growth and using a standardized range of aortic diameters. Let me just explain these last two factors a little bit. Over the years, in published papers, including several in the British Journal of Surgery, we've seen growth estimation by a variety of different methods, from fitting to diameters to a straight line over time, fitting a curve, or just looking at the first and last diameter and dividing by time. And these methods all give different numerical estimates for growth rate. In addition, there have been some studies that have reported only limited size ranges, perhaps just 3 to 4.5 centimetre aneurysms, whilst other studies have included some patients with aneurysms of 6 centimetres and even larger. And we know that size, as size increases, so does the rate of growth. So what we wanted to do is to standardize both the method of estimating growth and the size range of the included aneurysms. And therefore, we identified as many different studies of small aneurysm growth as we could, although we excluded the very small ones with less than 100 patient years of follow-up. And we obtained the data sets for the individual patients. And in total, this was more than 15,000 patients from 18 studies. And we applied a single robust method to assess growth rate, strictly limited to the range between 3 and 5.5 centimetres of aortic diameter. And we allowed for the increase in growth rate with increasing diameter.
And what did you learn?
For growth, we learnt that growth rate is the same in men and women. And there have been some studies that have reported that women are far worse as patients with small aneurysms and have much faster growth rates. We couldn't verify this at all in this very large study. We found that cardioprotective drugs and blood pressure and medications for blood pressure appeared to have absolutely no effect on growth rate. We saw that growth rates do not appear to have changed at all over the past 30 years, consistent with the observation that things like blood pressure drugs might not have a significant effect. And we identified two factors which consistently influence growth. In patients with diabetes, aneurysms grow about 25% more slowly than in patients without diabetes. And patients who are still smoking, current smokers, have faster growth rates, somewhere between 16 and 20%, than those patients who've either given up smoking or never smoked. For rupture, there were not that many small aneurysm ruptures, and we have to be a little bit more cautious. But we did see that here there was a strong difference between men and women, and the rupture rate was 4 times higher in women than men. The rupture rate in those who still smoke, current smokers, was also higher, twofold higher, than those who no longer smoke. We saw that the rate increased of rupture, that is, increased with increasing blood pressure. And, interestingly, consistent with the first study we discussed, we saw that the rate was decreasing with time, with calendar year.
We're going to come on to the National AAA screening program in a moment, talking to Mr. Earnshaw. Do you think that your paper has any implications for that program?
Well, the paper we have just published is really limited to thinking about things that might affect personalised surveillance intervals. But this project is now moving forward rapidly to the phase where we are evaluating safe and cost-effective resurveillance intervals for patients with small aneurysms. And this could have some important impact, hopefully beneficial, for the National Aneurysm Screening Programme. And I'd just like to say, for this part of the project, we've included a patient focus group to look at acceptable risks and benefits to patients. And in this phase of the research, it's been particularly important that we included patients. And we hope to have these results available within the next few months.
Well, thank you, Janet, very much indeed for that. Let's turn to Jonathan, who, as well as his role at the BJS, is director of the NHS AAA screening programme. First of all, Jonathan, can you tell us a bit about the programme?
The programme I lead is responsible for England rather than the whole of the UK, but there are similar programmes starting up in the whole of the UK. And the aim of the ultrasound screening programmes is to reduce deaths from ruptured aneurysm. We think that a well-run screening programme should be able to reduce the death rate by 40 to 50% from ruptured aneurysms. We're currently implementing the programme in England, and by 2013, every 65-year-old man will be offered an ultrasound scan in his year that he's 65, and men over the age of 65 will be able to self-refer.
And do you agree with Janet about the implications of her work for the programme?
Well, first I'd like to congratulate Janet and her colleagues for their consistently high-quality research, which is really helping to inform both the management of aneurysms and screening. She talks about personal surveillance, programs, which I think probably are less useful to a national program than the work that she's doing on surveillance intervals. We're going to be screening approximately 300,000 65-year-old men every year and finding 6,000 new aneurysms. So the real information I take from Janet's work is going to be the optimal surveillance intervals, because if we can reduce the number of scans that 65-year-old men need with smaller aneurysms, well, clearly there will be a cost saving and an organisational advantage. She also mentions the problems about screening for women. At the moment, we don't screen women because the incidence is too low. But I take the message that she's giving about aneurysms probably being more dangerous in women, and certainly I and many other vascular surgeons would tend to operate on women with smaller diameter aneurysms than the 5.5 centimetres that's traditional in men.
What about the screening program as a whole? I mean, Janet's work shows that the rate of rupture has been decreasing. Do you think that the population screening for AAAs has started too late?
Yes, it's ironic, isn't it, that the NHS is introducing a program just as aneurysms are starting to go away. When the programs were originally designed, based on research from nearly 20 years ago now, the rate of aneurysms in 65-year-old men was approximately 4%. And in the early years of the current NHS program in England, we're only finding roughly 2% of men have an aneurysm. However, as I mentioned before, that means we're going to find 6,000 new aneurysms a year. Already we've diagnosed 1,000 men with an aneurysm and repaired well over 100. So even at that level, we're going to find a significant number of aneurysms to treat.
And do you think that the screening is cost-effective then?
Well, that's really important for a program that's funded by a health service. And clearly, we wouldn't have been able to start the screening program unless the research had been very clear in showing that it was cost-effective using current guidelines. In fact, we've got some ongoing research looking at current incident levels, and it looks as if aneurysm screening will remain cost-effective using NHS guidelines to an incidence rate as low as 1%. The calculations are being done at the moment, and that research, I hope, we'll be able to publish later, and maybe we'll even be able to see it in BJS.
So it's still very cost-effective then. Jonathan, in this May issue, would you like to just tell us very briefly about some of those highlights?
Yes, we have a total of 5 papers. The other 3 include a teaser from Sweden, which shows that the incidence of aneurysms varies from north to south in the country. And the authors start to speculate on whether there are both genetic and environmental reasons. One of the things about aortic aneurysms is there is some incidence of the rate of them running in families, and that will be another area for future research. There's also a valuable paper from Grant and colleagues from Manchester looking at risk prediction after aortic surgery, and a large number of patients treated on the National Vascular Database, the UK database of aneurysm procedures. And finally, many people will be aware that there's been a significant remodelling of vascular services that's ongoing in the UK, moving vascular surgery from low volume to higher volume hospitals. And much of the justification for this comes from research into volume and outcome that comes from St George's. We're publishing a paper in the May issue which shows how the volume outcome effect is not only effective up to 30 days, but it seems to persist for several years. So the idea that you get improved results from higher volume hospitals is not only in the short term, but it appears to be in the long term too.
Well, thank you both very much indeed for telling us about an area of medicine that seems to be on the up and up. And thank you very much for listening. We hope you'll join us again.